I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, a teen athlete in Washington State says she was sexually violated by her trans opponent and that the school district buried it. She'll join us. Plus, Democrats want to push a bill that would protect kids from punishment if they walk out of school to protest. And we'll talk about the battle of the Super Bowl halftime shows, that and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. Hello, hello, and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. Earlier this morning, we broke an exclusive story really centering around the continuing stupid controversy of boys and girls sports, because we shouldn't have to waste a single second of our show talking about this. But unfortunately, this is our ridiculous reality in Washington State and elsewhere in the country. But this story is pretty serious, and it levies some pretty serious allegations that are now the subject of a criminal investigation. This is the story published on Patreon Locals. Teen athlete says she was sexually violated by a trans wrestler and the school district did nothing. So this story centers around a 16-year-old sophomore at Rogers High School in Puyallup. Her name is Callie Keeler. You'll hear from her momentarily. She has been wrestling her really entire life. She's 16, but she's been wrestling since she was like old enough to walk. There was a match on December 6th. This story takes us back a couple months, and the timeline here is really important. And she was wrestling. She wrestles at 190 pounds. She was actually wrestling a wrestler from another school in the same school district. So in the Puyallup, Washington school district, there's three high schools. She goes to, as I said, Rogers, then there's Puyallup High School, and then there's Emerald Ridge High School. So she was wrestling the 190-pound wrestler from Emerald Ridge when something very strange happened that's never happened to her before. Here's a clip of the video from that bout.
Get to your base! Get to your base! Get to your base!
I don't know what she said to you, but why her face looks like that.
So you might have caught something there. I want to pull up a still from the video where you can see Callie Keeler's face. And she is clearly in distress. She looks very confused, looks upset. And that's her mom you hear in the video. And you would have seen her try to mouth something. She's looking directly at her mother, who's videotaping this. And she says to her mom, her fingers are in my vagina, essentially used a slang word for vagina. Mom kind of is laughing because she's like, why did my daughter make that face? Her mom clearly could not make out what her daughter was trying to say. And you can tell from that angle that she cannot see what her daughter is talking about. Nicole, will you play the video just one more time? You see the wrestler in green has...
Get to your base!
Right there.
Get to your base!
Arm between the legs.
Get to your base!
And Callie Keeler trying to mouth something.
Why her face looks like that.
To her mom. Well, what Callie Keeler says happened in that moment, again, this is on December 6th, is she said that her opponent, who at the time she didn't realize, as you're about to find out, was a biological boy, thought it was a girl wrestler like everyone else she wrestles. She said that in that moment, her opponent, and forgive the vulgarity, but it's important that we detail what happened, reached between her legs and very forcefully for several seconds, put their fingers in her private area, tried to push her fingers in her vagina. Here's what Callie Keeler told us.
And that has never happened, like, out of all the years I've wrestled.
Because you do get, you know, you're on the mat and you're trying to flip people and pin people, but all those years through elementary and middle school, you'd never had anything like that happen to you.
No.
So in the moment, what are you thinking? Or are you just so involved, like, you can't even...
Like, I was just kind of like, what the heck?
Yeah.
Like, I didn't really know what to do or how to handle mm-hmm. that situation. I just wanted the match to be over.
Yeah. But you immediately knew that wasn't right. It was nothing you'd ever experienced. No. And again, to reiterate, you don't know it's a biological boy at the time. You don't know your opponent is a biological boy. Yeah. So how long after that does the match end?
I was just kind of done with the match, so mm-hmm. I just let them pin me. So like maybe 30, 40 seconds later.
So you lost, you got pinned, but you're saying it's because you wanted it to be done.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to point this out because I've got this 16-year-old girl across from me. We taped this interview with her last week. We've been working on this story for a couple weeks. And she is, I can tell, she's mortified to have to talk about it. You see her hands below and she's sort of like fidgeting and kind of smiling because I think she's so nervous and embarrassed to have to detail this awful thing that happened to her as a teenage girl and be here with a podcast host having to advocate for herself for reasons that will become clear. So she throws the match because this thing happened to her that's never happened to her before. She felt like it was intentional. She lets her opponent pin her and just loses, immediately goes to her mother, says, hey, this just happened to me. And even believing that it was a girl that had done this to her, decides she's going to report it to her coach and try to elevate and escalate the situation because she really believes she was intentionally sexually violated, only to find out moments after the match that that wasn't a girl. To make matters worse, it was a boy.
I told my mom like right after the match mm-hmm. and I couldn't find my coach.
Okay.
Like after the match because there were other matches going on. And then a different coach from another school came up and talked to me about that match.
Okay. And did they, because they had seen something, or did they just talk generally speaking? Like, what did they want to tell you?
They wanted to tell me that it was a biological boy that I was wrestling.
Wow.
And so, yeah.
So what was your reaction to hearing just that it was a boy?
I was like really shocked at first because like I didn't know what to think of it because like high school wrestling, it's a women's wrestling team. So I wasn't really thinking that, and I wasn't concerned about that.
And so she feels violated then in more ways than one. She feels like she was essentially tricked into wrestling a boy and had no idea. I mean, she said, you know, back when she was younger, like elementary school and middle school, women's wrestling and girls wrestling hadn't really taken off. And so it was not uncommon to have co-ed wrestling. She said, that's much different, though, as you develop and boys get much stronger than girls. And she said when that was happening in elementary school and middle school, she would know and she'd have a choice to decide whether she was going to wrestle a boy or not. And so she felt like in this moment, she feels like she's just been sexually violated. And then she finds out it wasn't even a girl who did it. It was a biological boy. And so she feels violated again. And I want to, before I get into the second element of this story, because to me, and I've always said about this stuff, I mean, in this instance, the accusation here is an intentional sexual assault, essentially. So there's that element of this story. And there's the element of the story about a girl basically being tricked into wrestling in a very hands-on sport, right, with a boy. But then there is potentially another criminal element of the story, and that is the fact that over the course of 2 months after this happened on December 6th, multiple people within the Puyallup School District knew about the allegation that Callie Keeler was making and didn't do anything about it, despite the fact that state law mandates that they report it. But one element of this I want to get off the table right away. Wrestling is a hands-on sport. I grew up watching wrestling. I have friends who are still in wrestling. I went to college with somebody who went on to be an Olympic wrestler and win the Olympics, Jordan Burroughs. So I'm very familiar with wrestling as a sport. And one of the first things that came up when Callie Keeler emailed us about this allegation is, okay, does this happen often? And I think that's a fair question, right? And so I went about reaching out to individuals who have no relationship to this story whatsoever, are just, you know, professionals in wrestling, coaching, or have wrestled for a long time. And I showed them the video. I talked through the allegation that Callie Keeler was making. We detail what some of these experts say in our written story if you want to read that. After watching the video, after hearing what Callie said, both of the experts we spoke to, one who's been a wrestler and is now a coach for 40 years, and another one who coaches female wrestling, they both say that this doesn't happen. There's this kind of joke among wrestlers, it's called checking the oil, where in certain moves you might inadvertently, and again, I'm going to be crude, but I just want to inadvertently sort of your hands go in in the buttocks, right? And they immediately move it. And it's this very embarrassing thing because it's not done intentionally. And when that happens, you move it quick because you don't want a flagrant foul or to be disqualified if you're thought to be doing it intentionally, if the referee sees you. And both of these experts said that given the move that was happening at that time, there was no reason for the male wrestler to put their hands between Callie Keeler's legs. And again, if you could pull up still, Nicole, if you have that available, that in that move, and this is very important to understand, that usually if you're trying to flip someone over, right, to get them pinned, you would put your arm on that top leg under the knee or maybe the thigh. But there would be no reason for a prolonged period of time to have your arm and your hand reaching in and pressing into someone's private parts. And so both the experts we spoke to said in their expert opinion, it looked intentional. And that, you know, the one who's been in wrestling for 40 years said, never has anything like that happened to me or happened to one of my wrestlers. And so it was important for us to talk about that, given the very physical contact nature of wrestling. Now, let's get into how the school district responded to this, because I think this is one of the most serious aspects of this story. And I believe it shows that in Washington state, school districts, because of state policies, will protect these trans athletes by any means necessary, even if it means violating the law. And we have all the receipts here. So this happened December 6th. Callie has a conversation with her coach about what happened, about how she feels about it. 2 days later, Callie's parents email several of the coaches at the school and said in this email, what are you guys going to do about this? You know, we're very uncomfortable. We're even more uncomfortable now knowing that the person who did this is a biological boy. Where do we go from here? In writing, Callie's coach responds, again, this is 2 days later, December 8th, I most certainly would not put Callie on the mat if I thought she was competing with a male. I will investigate this and look to see if we have a video on our end. I will touch base with you either this afternoon or tomorrow morning after I do my due diligence. According to Callie's family, they never heard anything back after that from the school district. Never heard anything back. Now, as you know, on January 22nd, on this show, we happened to air a story, unrelated to anything Callie went through, about the two male wrestlers at Emerald Ridge High School. January 22nd, we aired a story about how about a dozen girls had gone to the principal and vice principal of Emerald Ridge High School and complained that there's two male wrestlers on that team, were making them uncomfortable in the locker room. That their accusation was that these boys would come in and wouldn't even change or do anything. They'd just be looking at the girls. So the girls in a big group went to the principal and vice principal to complain about it, and they were basically brushed aside. So we do a story talking about the two male wrestlers, including this male wrestler at the 190-pound level. After we do that, a couple days later, we get an email from Callie Keeler to our tip line. And she says, hey, I saw your story about, you know, these two male wrestlers. I want you to know what happened to me. I reported this to the school. Nothing has been done about it. And keep in mind, state law mandates that school officials, school employees, if they even believe that there's a possibility a child was assaulted either at home or, yes, by another student, they are mandated by state law to report it. Even if they don't believe it, even if they think you can't prove it, they are mandated by state law to report it. So we get that email from Callie Keeler on January the 25th. We immediately reach out to the Puyallup School District for comment. Only then does the Puyallup School District do what they're required to do under state law and report it to the Pierce County Sheriff's Office. So we reached out. It's now January 29th. Nicole sends an email seeking comment from the school district. The very next day, they finally, after nearly 2 months, pick up the phone and call the Pierce County Sheriff's Office and report as required to do so by law, and then they send us this email. This matter is currently under investigation. As such, the district is legally required to protect the privacy of students and families and cannot share details regarding individual students or specific incidents. What we can say is that student safety is a top priority and that all reports involving student safety are taken seriously. But as I said, there are multiple individuals within the school district who knew about the allegations that Callie was making and did not act on it in a manner consistent with state law. based on conversations we've had with Callie Keeler's family, based on emails that we've reviewed, we believe there were at least four individuals within the Puyallup School District who had a duty to report this to the police and failed to do so in a timely manner. State law says at the soonest available opportunity, or at least within 48 hours, we believe two coaches, we believe that an athletic director and a principal had an obligation to report this to police sooner than they did. We got confirmation, by the way, from the Pierce County Sheriff's Office that this incident is now the subject of a criminal investigation. They told us in an email, the school resource officer informed me he was called by the school to investigate a report of sexual assault at a wrestling match. This incident allegedly happened during the match between the victim and a transgender student. The victim was wrestling at the time. Last week, the school resource officer reviewed a video of the match, and he will be following up with the victim this week for further information. This is being investigated and is still active. So to me, there are so many layers to this story, but I think it is all under the overarching umbrella of pushing for and covering for radical gender ideology by any means necessary. Even if it means a girl who's told you she felt like she was forcibly assaulted goes ignored for 2 months. Even if it means that school district employees violate state law, not reporting is a gross misdemeanor punishable by up to a year in jail and a $5,000 fine. By any means necessary, my personal opinion, which is what this show is about, is that that's what happened here, is that the allegation was against a trans wrestler, and so everyone hoped Callie Keeler would just drop it. But she's a 16-year-old who has more courage than most adults in the state of Washington, and she didn't drop it. She came to us. She eventually went to the school resource officer, realizing that the adults that she told weren't going to do anything about it. And she sat in this studio and told, again, a very uncomfortable story publicly to let people know. And as I've said before, and as she said, she would have taken this path even if it had been a girl. But the fact that she found out it was a boy has now led her to fight these two fights. One, she wants there to be criminal charges. She feels like she was sexually assaulted. And then two, she firmly believes that no female athlete should have to compete against or wrestle against a biological boy without knowing that they're wrestling or competing against a biological boy.
You're telling people on camera about it. Why is it so important for you to, you know, not only have this debate, you know, come to a head, but for it's that important where you're willing to talk about this publicly?
Because, like, women's wrestling has just grown so much within the past couple of years, and I don't want it to, like, shrink again with just, like, this whole situation going on.
Yeah. Would you have reported to your coach the unwanted touching had it not been a boy?
Yes.
So even if it had been a girl, that was like weird enough and concerning enough that you would have brought that to your coach.
Yeah.
What do you say to people? This whole debate's happening right now in our state, obviously, and we have an initiative that would protect girls' sports and say, if you're a biological boy, you can't participate. I'm sure you've seen some of the hate that we get, some of the hate that even teen athletes get. You know, we have a couple girls who've been really outspoken about these issues, and sometimes they need like armed security when they go places. Why do you think people get so upset at female athletes when they advocate against that?
I honestly couldn't even tell you. Everyone voices their own opinions, but people just get like more mad at certain athletes than others.
Yeah.
Like my friend group, they support me in like everything, and like they thought that is really weird what happened during the match too. I just think that like boys shouldn't be allowed in women's sports, whether they identify as female or not. Like they can identify as whatever, but in sports, especially strength-based sports, I feel like they need to be in their gender assigned sport.
And that young girl is opening herself up to a lot of criticism and hate, probably amongst her peers as well at school today, for saying that. What a shame that we have put this on these kids. And you'll notice we're not naming this wrestler who, by the way, over the weekend, as a freshman, qualified for state. Beat out more experienced girls, older girls, because it's a strength issue, right? In some regards. You know, you can have, and the experts who reviewed the video said they didn't even appear to be all that skilled at wrestling. But when you're a boy, you know, you can just throw girls around like a rag doll. And so that male wrestler is going to be at state in the 190-pound weight class. Important for people to know. But, you know, I'm not naming, they haven't been charged with a crime or anything like that. I think making about kids is about the kids is a mistake. This is about decisions made by adults that are putting kids in these situations. Even if they can't prove that this was intentional, you tricked a girl, a 16-year-old girl, into wrestling with a boy who then allegedly grabbed her private parts. No girl should ever be put in a situation like that against their will or be tricked into a situation like that. It's wrong. It's wrong. What are we doing to these kids? Why does a 16-year-old girl have to sit here and talk about something so embarrassing and open herself up to all this criticism and the hate that she's going to get from, yeah, adults on the left, I'm sure, bullying from adults on the left and probably some students? Why are we putting them in this situation? Why aren't we who's fighting for the girls? Who's fighting for the girls? I would ask anybody on the left who supports this idea, would you be okay with your daughter being put in a situation like that, unbeknownst to her? If the answer is yes, you're a horrible parent. Because that is just an awful thing to do. And Lord knows that politicians in our state don't care. I asked Governor Bob Ferguson, you'll recall, would you support your daughter, who you brag about her athletics all the time, having to compete against boys? And he brushed it aside and said, I'm obsessed with trans kids. It's a legitimate question. You, as grown adults and men, the state leaders on this issue are men in the state of Washington. You're forcing teenage girls into these situations or to just forfeit. But Callie Keeler didn't even have that option because she didn't even know she was wrestling a boy. It's absolutely absurd. And then we've got Chris Reichdahl, who I think is the worst offender of all of them, because he pretends, the head of the public school system in Washington state, he pretends to care about kids. Everything he does is, oh, caring about the kids who attend our public schools. He doesn't give a crap about the teen athletes, about the girls who have come forward. He did this interview with our friend Carlene Johnson at the Center Square. Highly recommend, by the way, watching the full thing. I don't know why he sat down with Carlene Johnson. I have no idea why he sat down with her, because he ended up just looking foolish. And he was very combative. He had done this press conference talking about he wants public schools to have more funding, blah, 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 blah. And then Carlene Johnson got a chance to sit down with him and talked about a lot of these radical gender ideology issues. And this issue of, you know, boys and girls sports and boys and girls spaces and boys and girls bathrooms and dressing rooms came up. And first of all, he won't even acknowledge that the boys are boys. He won't even use the phrase boys to refer to biological boys. Here's part of the interview.
This is a political process, remember, and they are part of a political process. So kudos to them for expressing their values and their interest. And like, they're sincere about this, and there are lots of students on both sides of it. It is still a political movement. It is still trying to get people to vote one way or the other. And part of their rhetoric and tactic I notice on their end is to sort of vilify. And then they argue that they're being vilified by some folks as well. So it is in the political space now. So the other thing is, as I meet with folks, I'm listening on their interests, but this is a legal process now. Right. This isn't about me writing rules. This isn't about that. I follow state law.
Let me push back on that a little bit, because you say it's a political process, but it's also an educational issue, right? Because they're still in sports and they're still, boys are in their locker rooms at school and they feel very uncomfortable. And so it's an education thing, which is your arena outside of politics as well.
But I have to correct you. There are not boys in locker rooms. There are transgender girls.
Good God.
They're biological
very
males.
Rarely in schools.
Good God.
No, there's biological boys using the bathrooms at my daughter's school. And the principal says, you know, we have to let them. And so people feel uncomfortable and have to go across campus to another bathroom. So
they're transgender girls.
Good God.
And this initiative even recognizes because it's going to, I guess, have a doctor check the genitals of kids.
Oh, my God.
No, it's the same sports physical. It's the same sports physical it's always been. The doctor will just have to sign it's a biological boy or it's a biological
kid. How will they know?
The same way they know now when you go and you take your child in for a sports physical, which I've done.
I did it.
Right.
They never did those checks with my kid.
They never did those checks with your kid? Okay, that's weird. Are they not? We had a pediatrician on the show who said, yeah, it's normal to monitor for regular development. You're saying that a doctor has never looked at your kid, breasts, whatever it is. I don't know if his child's a boy or a girl. Apparently he doesn't either because he can't differentiate. Your doctor knows if it's a biological boy or a biological girl. He says, how would they tell? Are you kidding me? And again, I'm not even going to go through this because it's such a dirty lie. It's meant to scare parents and make every parent in the state, if their daughter is in athletics, think that at any moment a coach is going to pull down their pants and check to see what they got going on down there, which, of course, is not what the initiative says. You have to, the WIAA says you have to have a physical exam every other year to participate in athletics. And so as part of that, the doctor just has to check, boy or a girl, and the doctor knows, okay? This isn't rocket science. You don't have to be a biologist. But the fact that he keeps using, oh, it's not a boy, it's a trans girl. Yeah, so a boy. I mean, he's gone off the deep end. He says he doesn't want to comment because now it's a political issue. So you can't defend the girls even though you've defended the trans athletes. You can't defend the girls because now they're in the political arena. I will say, though, during that interview, Carlene asked him, will you meet with these girls who've been trying to meet with you, like Annalie Wilson and Frances Dowd? He said yes. So I know right now an effort is underway to try to make that meeting happen. And I wonder if he'll sit there as smug as that to those girls and suggest, these aren't boys, these aren't boys, these aren't boys. Absolutely. We can't tell. How are we going to be able to tell if it's a boy or a girl? Absolutely unreal. Just one other thing I want to comment on this interview. So we, of course, did the story a couple weeks ago, and this is all in keeping. Of course, there's the two initiatives, one to protect girls' sports, the other one to restore parental rights. And meaning I have a right to know what's happening with my kid at school. And if my kid goes to school and their name is Eleanor and you're calling them Elliot and sending them to gender clinics during the day, I have a right as a parent to know about that. And that is what happened in a story we did. There's this child who today, 16 years old, Eleanor, is missing. Literally a missing child on the news, ran away from home. And this was a pattern of behavior that got worse when this child attended the Puyallup School District, same district. I don't know what the hell is in the water down in Puyallup. And we did this whole story with the mother. Eleanor might be somewhere on the streets of Olympia, but basically had gone to school. Counselor connected them with gender information on gender clinics, connected them with an attorney to try to separate Eleanor from her parents, which happened temporarily despite there being no evidence whatsoever of abuse. And we've called this is the result of an old bill that's in place now, Senate Bill 5599, which we called at the time government-sanctioned kidnapping of kids. Because what that bill said is that if a child leaves home because they don't believe their parents will conform to their desired gender identity, the state doesn't have to tell you where your child is. And that's what happened in Eleanor's case, which is government-sanctioned kidnapping of kids. You're taking a child away, you're helping a child leave home, and then withholding information on their whereabouts from the child's parents. What else would you call that? But Chris Reichdahl, when asked about this by Carlene, pushed back on this idea that the state is participating in kidnapping children.
And I see stuff on social media like they played a part in kidnapping a child. That's the first line in any story you should write, is the Puyallup School District had no role in kidnapping a child.
Yeah, they did.
But that's the narrative in a lot of these circles.
But they don't know where their daughter is now. And the school district does.
You believe that?
That's certainly the case. If they sent her, connected her with a group that then went to a judge, and the judge said the parents shouldn't have her.
The courts probably do, but I think your assertion that the school district knows is not factual. I think you should pursue that as a reporter to see if that's a fact.
Oh, wow. How condescending. And to be clear, we're not alleging, and I don't know that Carlene is, that the school district today knows where Eleanor is. But what we're referring to is at one point when Eleanor had run away from home while she was attending the Puyallup School District, the mom was beside herself calling the school saying, Eleanor still hasn't come home. We'll let you know when we find her and when she's coming back from school. At that moment, on the phone with that school counselor, the counselor knew they were heading to court a couple days later to testify on Eleanor's behalf to help her get removed from the home, despite no evidence of abuse. So in that instance, the school absolutely knew Eleanor was somewhere, was safe, wasn't dead, as the parents feared. So he doesn't want me to call that government-sanctioned kidnapping of kids? Fine, Chris Reichdahl. Fine, stick your head in the sand. Let schools leave parents in the dark, not knowing whether their kids are alive or dead, because you want that child to be named Elliot, not Eleanor, and you want them to be able to leave home and explore all sorts of radical, life-changing gender surgeries and ideology. I mean, that man is unfit to be the head of our public school system. Unfit. Probably the worst, I'm going to say it, of all the statewide elected officials, Bob Ferguson, Nick Brown, he is the worst. He is the most embarrassing. He is the most unfit for that job. He has no business deciding what's happening in public schools across the state of Washington. Absolutely disgusting. Now, I hope he makes good on his promise that he made to meet with these girls, because they've been trying to meet with statewide elected officials for a long time. And let's see if he's as condescending to them as he was to Karlene Johnson in that interview. We got a lot more to get to on the show today. First, if you're thinking about selling your home, getting the hell out of Washington state, I don't blame you. I'm not going anywhere. We got to keep fighting. It's sad and it's hopeless as it seems at times. But if you thought, Brandy, I've just had enough, reach out to our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com. Wes can help you get the hell out of here as quick as humanly possible. He's helped a lot of folks, whether you're moving across the street to a different city or to a different state. Wes is your guy. Elizabeth W. gave Wes and his team 5 stars, saying, I'm so glad I found Wes and his team. They were exactly what I was looking for when I needed to sell my condo. Working with them was stress-free, no pressure. They gave recommendations on suggested improvements. I was able to pick and choose what I wanted to get done based on my budget. They coordinated everything. She says, I love how they offered the exact support I needed without any pressure. I appreciate it for a quick and easy sale. 5 stars. Sellwithwes.com. Sellwithwes.com. It really just is a better way to sell your home. All right. We are going to talk more about what happened. A huge hearing in Olympia on Friday actually went down to over the proposed tax on millionaires, which I haven't mentioned it yet, but, you know, the Seahawks won the Super Bowl. I don't know if you guys heard. By the way, we'll get to it later. Most boring Super Bowl game ever.
Yeah.
For a second, I was like, they're going to have to make the kicker the MVP, right? Because he's the only one who scored any points. And I was like cheering for him to get the MVP. So we'll get to that. And the millionaire's tax, which is going to have a profound impact on the ability of the Seattle Seahawks to get back to the Super Bowl in the future. But first, I want to talk a little bit about the crime crisis that we're in and the seeming inability to hold repeat offenders accountable for their conduct. This segment is brought to you in partnership with our friends at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. Make sure you sign up for their newsletter to be alerted to opportunities to do just that. So we have a couple examples that we want to share with you of someone who, God, you got to lock them up and throw away the key. You know, you have Democrats in Olympia who are continually pushing these bills where the only function seems to be taking it easy on criminals. The only function seems to be helping them get out of prison earlier, helping them avoid prison altogether. It is the strangest thing, especially when you're talking about people who prey on the innocent and vulnerable. So there is a story that Tacoma Police Department put out about this guy who, thank God he's in custody now. We'll see how long that he stays there and all that happens, but went on one hell of a crime spree. So it says Tacoma police arrested a suspect in a series of robberies targeting elderly women. So it says Tacoma police arrested the suspect after receiving multiple reports from elderly women who were approached and robbed of cash and purses. Once detectives identified a possible suspect, they intensified their investigative efforts, including surveillance, and developed probable cause for an arrest. It says on January 16th, 2026, detectives, along with the Special Investigations Unit, followed their suspect to an area of Tacoma where he parked in the lot of a Cash America business. As officers moved in, he tried to cover his face. He armed himself with a firearm because he was like, they followed him there. And he was absolutely like, he was putting on a baklava to cover his face. He was arming himself with a gun. He was going to go commit more robberies of these elderly women in this Cash America business. So they end up surrounding him. Thank God. He attempted to flee by ramming police vehicles with the stolen vehicle he was driving. So they take him into custody. They've booked him into the Pierce County Jail. He's been charged with 47 counts, including robbery in the second degree, 4 counts, malicious mischief in the third degree, 6 counts, 25 counts of identity theft, two counts of attempting to elude, two counts of assault, two counts of reckless driving, unlawful possession of a firearm, possession of a stolen firearm, unlawful possession of a stolen vehicle, theft in the third degree, resisting arrest, and making or possessing motor vehicle theft tools. And they say that's probably not all the charges that he'll end up facing. Now, here's the issue. He was under supervision by the state of Washington while all of this was happening. Over the course of weeks, at least 47 criminal counts, multiple strong-armed robberies of the elderly. This is from Como News. Smith was released from prison last spring and was under community custody supervision by the Washington Department of Corrections at the time he allegedly committed the robberies. It says detectives in Tacoma began noticing a pattern of parking lot robberies in October. October, you guys. Says the older, mostly Asian folks would leave a store or gas station, they'd get into their vehicle and put their purse on the seat, said a Tacoma police officer. As they're driving off, the person would run up, shatter a window real quick, grab the purse, and then go. So since October, they start recognizing this pattern of what's happening, mostly to elderly Asian American women. This guy got out of prison last spring of 2025. A couple months go by, then he starts this violent crime spree that continues until January, when they finally catch up to him and arrest him. October, November, December, January. He's on community custody supervision by the state of Washington. What the hell does that supervision look like? So that's deeply troubling. He's entered a not guilty plea. He's being held on $1.5 million bail. Repeat offenders. I mean, someone like that, just absolutely insane. Here's another example. So the Seattle Police Department, and this gets into the issue of sexually, I said, you know, we're talking about people who prey on the vulnerable and the innocent. Vulnerable, elderly people, absolutely vulnerable. The innocent, children. I mean, these are really the type of offenders that Democrats are so obsessed with helping. I don't understand what's going on. So this has to do with sexually violent predators, right? In Washington State, if you're not familiar, we had this great idea at some point in time to put them on an island, which I love, right? I mean, Florida kills them, but on an island is a good second option, I guess. And you put them on an island, they're involuntarily committed after their prison sentence if they're deemed basically irredeemable. So they go through all these mental evaluations, and if they still are expressing a desire to hurt children or, you know, child pornography or whatever it is, they're like, all right, your prison term is over, but you're not ready to go back into the community. So we're putting you on McNeil Island. But as you know, when now Governor Bob Ferguson was Attorney General, they really started releasing these offenders from McNeil Island at a pretty rapid clip. And apparently that has continued under the current Attorney General, Nick Brown. So let's go through this story and this example. So the Seattle Police Department put out a press release on a violent sex offender they arrested in the Chinatown International District. It says a 57-year-old sex offender with a decades-long history of sexually assaulting children, having graphic sexual images of children and other felony crimes, is back in jail, this time accused of possessing and distributing child sexual abuse material. His name is Richard Eugene Jackson. He served time in state prison and at the Special Commitment Center on McNeil Island, ends up getting arrested by the Seattle Police Department's ICAC, which is their Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force, which these are like, I've spent time with these detectives doing their work, and I don't know how anybody does what they do. It is so sad and horrible, the things that they see, but they do it because they want to protect kids. They've seen the worst of the worst. So apparently they got 18 cyber tips over a short period of time accusing this guy of possessing and distributing child sexual abuse material. They called it an urgent case given his history and his sex offender status. Okay. Como News, again, I'm going to give Como credit for the work that they did on this story. They look into this past. Turns out he spent 20 years on McNeil Island. I need you to understand how bad you have to be put on McNeil Island for 20 years. Because you've already served your prison time. This is kind of an interesting constitutional issue, right? Where you take someone who's been convicted, they serve their prison time, and you involuntarily commit them to an island. And the state of Washington has been able to do that legally based on their propensity to reoffend. But every so often, they get to argue their case that if they choose to, that they should be released from McNeil Island. So they can't be held there indefinitely without these court proceedings taking place. So 20 years to spend on McNeil Island means that even in this state, they realized this was a bad dude who, if released from McNeil, was probably going to hurt kids. So Como News said Jackson has 8 prior sex offense convictions, According to the state, those convictions include the sexual assaults of a 12-year-old boy and a 7-year-old boy, similar child sex abuse material charges, and attempts to connect with elementary-aged boys for sexual contact, according to the Sex Offender Registry. In a previous case, Jackson admitted to sexually abusing around 70 children, young boys and girls. How does someone like that even get out of prison? Let alone, you know, get off McNeil Island. But how is someone who's admitted to sexually abusing 70 children, how do they ever see the light of day? That's absolutely beyond me. Court records state Jackson was sent to the Special Commitment Center on McNeil Island in 2003. It's run by the Department of Social and Health Services. In 2019, so this is under the former Attorney General, Bob Ferguson, he was conditionally released from McNeil Island to the Secure Community Transition Facility in King County. Over the next few years, they kept stepping it down. He was released into less restrictive custody and then recommitted after alleged violations, according to court documents. It's important that we all understand the track here, right? So he, you know, does horrible things to kids, spends time in prison. In 2003, he gets sent to the island. He's civilly committed there for 20 years. Under former Attorney General Bob Ferguson, he gets released to a less restrictive community alternative in King County. And as they're stepping it down, trying to help him fold back into society, what does he do? Well, he commits a violation, and so then he's recommitted. So then Como says, in March of 2025, the state's sexually violent predator petition against Jackson was dismissed following an evaluation by a state expert. Court records show Jackson was then granted unconditional release from community custody in March in a case handled by the Attorney General's office. And who would that have been at the time? Nick Brown, the new Attorney General. That release was just months before Seattle police began investigating Jackson for these new allegations. What the hell kind of criminal justice system is that? The dude admits to abusing like 70 kids. Gets put on an island for the irredeemable for 20 years. Under AG Bob Ferguson, who we now in our infinite wisdom elected governor, they can't keep him there. Probably didn't even try. So he gets released into the community, still on supervision. And even though he's still on some form of supervision, commits a violation. So then they have to bump it back up. And then under Nick Brown, it's unconditional release. So now you go from this guy who's already shown he can't be trusted out in the community, even after spending all this time on an island, all this time in prison. And now it's like, you know what? He's doing just fine, a state expert says. Holy hell, who is this state expert? Harry Goldberg? PhD? Something tells me we shouldn't be using Harry Goldberg as an expert anymore. Because what after, you know, 30 years of this, and even violations out in 2019 on community custody, what would make you believe that he's not a threat to the community anymore and he no longer wants to hurt children? Makes no sense. But the state says, yep, let him go. Unconditional release under the current Attorney General, Nick Brown. And what does he immediately go do, according to the Seattle Police Department? Immediately starts preying on kids. Wow, it really took a rocket scientist to figure out that that's what this guy would do. And this story, by the way, made it national over the weekend. Not a surprise. Libs of TikTok picked it up. I don't know that I love that they chose this picture of Nick Brown, but here we are. Washington Attorney General Nick Brown allowed a convicted child sex offender with a long-time criminal history out of prison without any restrictions or supervision. A few months later, he was accused of child porn. Nick Brown should be forced to share a prison cell with him. Now, you know me, I like accuracy. It's not entirely accurate to say that Nick Brown let him out of prison with no restrictions. There is a process that has to take place because even this screwed up dude has constitutional rights. And when the state expert, Harry Goldberg, dismissed the state's sexually violent predator petition, so the state was petitioning to continue to label him an SVP, which would have kept him on McNeil Island. And then the state expert says, despite all this evidence that he just cannot stop this predilection, I'm going to say that he's not a risk to the community. There is very little at that point that the state of Washington, that the Attorney General's office can do. But the truth is that Nick Brown, Bob Ferguson started this trend because Democrats want to close McNeil Island. They want all the sex offenders in the community. And so with or without this distinction, this expert saying he wasn't a threat anymore, I think that this guy would have wound up on the streets and would have wound up doing exactly what he was doing. Absolutely unreal. No one is safe in a state like Washington. That segment is brought to you in partnership with our friends at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. Make sure you sign up for our newsletter to be alerted to opportunities to do just that and get involved in the political process in Washington State. Just wild. The sex offender situation in Washington State, we were doing it so right, and now we're doing it so wrong. And the reason is there is a proactive effort to take it easy on sex predators. What did we talk about a couple weeks ago? Democrats literally introduced a bill to reduce the sentences and punishment for sex predators who are caught up in those net nanny stings, who are soliciting, like the all of Chris Hansen, you know, NBC, who are To Catch a Predator, who are soliciting what they think is a child, ends up being a cop, they get arrested. Well, Democrats in our state don't believe they should have as harsh of a punishment as someone who actually met up with a real child. What do you say about that, except that they're like pro-predator? I hate to say that, but what else do you make of it? It's wild. All right, we'll talk about the millionaire tax and how it absolutely could cost Seattle its Super Bowl championship team. I am not trying to be hyperbolic. If you don't believe that that's a possibility, I told you so. We'll get to that coming up. First, if you're a small to mid-sized landlord in the state of Washington, consider becoming a member of the Rental Housing Association of Washington, one of our wonderful show sponsors. They are Washington's trusted resource, empowering housing providers, and they are down in Olympia trying to advocate on your behalf and stop some of this insane housing policy that's been happening in Olympia for the last couple of years, including rent control and really trying to help the party in power understand the error of their ways. So you can become a member. They have a ton of activities all year round, so you can get together with other housing providers in the state of Washington. And then they can also help you on an individual basis, trying to navigate the world of complex rules and regulations at the local, county, and state level. So rhawa.org, become a member today. Washington's trusted resource, empowering housing providers. All right, a huge hearing in Olympia on Friday that I went down for, despite not having a press pass. We talk more about the press pass ongoing saga in a little bit, but you don't need a press pass to go to a public hearing on a bill. So it was a rushed hearing on the millionaire tax, which is being pushed by Democrats and Governor Bob Ferguson. The two bills, if you want to continue to track them through the process, I always encourage people to do so. Go to ledge.wa.gov and plug it in. House Bill 2724, Senate Bill 6346. So what was heard on Friday was the Senate version in the Senate Ways and Means Committee. And something pretty remarkable happened. So in the days leading up to that hearing, as you know, you can take just 30 seconds and you can register your position pro or con for any bill in Olympia. And there have been some really huge numbers when it comes to citizens registering in the past. Like last year, remember when they were trying to increase property taxes? 40,000 citizens took the time to get on their computer and sign in against that bill. And I think that that feedback was so overwhelming and it was so unpopular that even Democrats had to just shelve it and say, okay, we're not gonna do this year. So in the days leading up to this hearing, people were doing the same thing. 60,000 plus, more than 60,000 Washingtonians took the time to register their opposition to the millionaire's tax. And I'll tell you, we were watching this in real time because we were sharing the link. Other people were sharing the link. It was 61,359 people who signed in con, which beat this record of what happened last year in the property tax bill. So we're watching this. And over the course of several days, it's growing very slowly. But it's like, oh, my gosh, yeah, people are starting to register. And so it was very grassroots. It was this very natural thing where all of a sudden, oh, my gosh, 61,000 people. So this will really piss me off. We should be celebrating that, right? I don't think it's going to actually make a difference. Democrats don't care. They're going to push the millionaire's tax through. But anytime that many citizens get involved in the political process where they actually take this proactive step of registering, and hell, I'll even give credit to the 19,000 people who registered in favor of it. It's a much smaller number than the 60,000 who are against it. But I love when people get involved in the political process and make their voice known by just saying pro or con. We should all celebrate that, and politicians should celebrate that too. Oh, but no. Democrats, there started to be some whispers that Democratic lawmakers were suggesting that this was like a bot situation. Oh, no, 60,000 citizens can't oppose an income tax. despite the fact they voted against an income tax many, many times in the past. Oh no, this must be a bot situation. And I gotta say, I was so disappointed with my former colleagues at Fox 13 because they were down there, they covered this hearing, and they let some random ass activist use their airwaves to claim that the 60,000 people were just bots.
This morning, Republicans sent out a rally cry. They contend as of 9 a.m., a staggering 54,000 people have signed on in opposition of it.
There's going to be a lot of those 50,000 people were bots, potentially. So, you know, what? I think when you actually look at the IP addresses and who's actually signing in, it's everyday Washingtonians who are in support of tax fairness.
There's no evidence of that. Fox 13. How could you just allow this activist to come and say, oh no, the people who signed in favor of the millionaire's tax were real people. But the people who signed in opposed, which I was one of them, who signed in opposed to the millionaire's tax, were just bots. It's one thing for an activist or for Democrats to say that, but for the news media to put it on with no evidence whatsoever, that's really messed up. I'm gonna reach out. Because I like that reporter, and of course I love most of my colleagues at Fox. I'm going to reach out because that is absolutely outrageous. There's no evidence of that whatsoever. Really pissing me off. Anyway, there was also, it was a packed house. I was there. It was funny. I walked in. There was a bunch of SEIU union types there, and it was quiet in the room. Then I walked in, and it was like, Brandy's here. Like the union SEIU were like triggered by my presence, which I found quite entertaining. But there was a lot of testimony for and against. One of the people who testified against the income tax on millionaires is former state attorney general Rob McKenna, and I thought he made a very good point.
Under our state constitution, we can have a state income tax if it follows the rules for property taxes. It must be uniform and no higher than 1% per year. Okay. This is because Washington's voters amended our constitution long ago to define property in what the Supreme Court called the broadest terms imaginable. Quote, everything, whether tangible or intangible, subject to ownership. Voters adopted this sweeping definition to subject intangibles like stocks, bonds, and money to property taxes. Four times since then, Washington's legislature has sent constitutional amendments to the voters to exclude income from this expansive definition. Those legislatures did that because they and the state Supreme Court understood the Constitution's plain meaning. If this legislature wants a progressive income tax, it should send an amendment to the voters for their decision. It shouldn't pretend that the Constitution is not clear unless every legislator who votes for this bill is prepared to explain why taxpayers don't have a property
right. Thank you, Mr. McKenna.
Yeah, and that's the point. If you really think we need to fix this, the only reasonable way to do it is to amend the state constitution and send that to voters to see if they're in favor of it. They won't do that because they know what voters will say. Democrats are literally arguing, and this is the craziest thing, their justification for the millionaire's tax, which will immediately go into a legal challenge, because our state constitution, income is property, and the only legal way to tax property is a flat 1% in Washington state, according to our state constitution. So what Democrats are hoping their friends on the state Supreme Court will do is overturn 100 years of precedent and say, oh, income isn't property. Income isn't property. Which, think about that. If I get a check and I cash it, okay? I get mailed a check, paid for something, and I cash it. And I take that money and I put it in my safe at home. You're telling me that money's not my property? Whose property is it? Whose property is my personal income, if not mine? How do you even attempt to try to suggest that my money isn't my property? And that's why that has withheld for 100 years. But now they have this ideologically super progressive packed state Supreme Court that's going to say that that money in my bank account or in my safe at home isn't my property. And therefore, they can tax it at a rate well above 1%, and it doesn't have to be uniform in any way. That's a really insane thing. And if the state Supreme Court rules that, then really they've shown that they don't care about the Constitution, they don't care about the law, they don't care about precedent, and anything is on the table for them at that point. That's wild. There was a lot of testimony as well in favor of the millionaire's tax, and honestly, a lot of it was people who just want free stuff.
My name is Alina Swart, and I live in Assotin County. I'm a steering committee member of the Direct Cash Coalition and was on the Poverty Reduction Workgroup Steering Committee. I have received the Working Families Tax Credit every year since it launched and strongly support the age expansion in this bill and taking a step to fix the upside down tax code. I am very grateful for this credit and use mine to pay my phone bill for a year in advance for my husband and I. It takes one monthly payment off my list, and I know it's taken care of so that doctors and schools and my children can always reach me.
So we have to tax millionaires and small business owners out of the state so you can have your cell phone paid for? I'm sorry, I have a problem with that. I just have an issue with that. There was also a lot of people who testified saying, we need this millionaire's tax to fund our schools. Except the millionaire's tax in the language and the law doesn't specifically allocate a dime of it to schools. It goes into the general fund. And yes, a big chunk of the general fund goes to fund K-12 education. But there's nothing setting it aside for education. So that's all just ridiculous. They're just making stuff up, not to mention our schools have doubled the amount of money they spend per pupil, and they're still saying pleading poverty, which is ridiculous. One of the big themes moving forward, and we'll cover this more throughout the week, this is really going to kill, and a lot of the testimony was about this, this is going to kill LLCs. This is going to kill small businesses who are passed through. So basically the way that I'll just give you an example of me as a small business owner, the way that my business is structured, I'm taxed on what's left in my business account at the end of the year. Even if I don't pay myself that money, I still get taxed on it. And so under this millionaire's tax, you know, because any small business owner, you've got to keep operating costs in your account. You can't just empty your account at the end of every year and write yourself a check. You've got to make payroll. You have to keep money on hand for an emergency. What if there's an economic downturn? We need to have some, you know, a few months of expenses for viability. But now, even if, you know, let's say I paid myself $100 for the year and then I left, you know, we don't make this much money on the show, but let's say one day we do. I hope we do. Let's say I left, you know, $999,090. Does that make sense? Yes. In the account, I would be taxed as a millionaire because I'm getting taxed for what's left in my business account. That makes no sense. And so you're robbing these small businesses of the ability to make payroll, the ability to plan, have a contingency in place. It's really problematic. Here's also something that's very problematic. Repeatedly, Democrats, when confronted, will not commit to not making the millionaire income tax on income tax on everyone. And I've said that's the goal here. They want to challenge this, get it to a friendly state Supreme Court, have voters approve it because it's a millionaire's tax and we're going to tax the big bad rich people. And as soon as it's done, that will be an income tax on everyone. It's what they've always wanted. It's what they're going to do. And it's very telling that people like Senate Majority Leader Jamie Peterson, when confronted directly, won't rule out expanding the millionaire's tax to everyone.
I'm just curious, in your view, should an income tax in Washington state be structured so that it will eventually be able to apply to middle and working class families, or should it permanently be limited to high income earners?
Thank you, Senator Gildon. The bill that is in front of us is only about people who have at least $1 million of income. That is the decision that we have before us as a legislature this year and as a committee, I guess, first. We don't have the ability to bind future legislatures, and I suspect that in the future, we all want to make sure that our successors will have the flexibility to respond to the challenges that they see in front of them.
Word soup. And you heard him there trying to take a gulp because he knows he's just a liar. I mean, trying to tap dance around the issue and just word soup. Because you guys, they're going to just tax everyone's income. If they weren't going to, they would just say as much. But he's saying, yeah, we're going to do that. Because the non-answer is an answer. And what's going to happen, even if it were just going to be millionaires, which it's not, it's not. But even if it were, it'll be an economic disaster for the state of Washington. We're already one of the states with the highest tax burden for wealth and the highest tax burden for businesses. And this is going to get worse. And these latest numbers out from the Association of Washington Businesses, they did an employers survey. And this is from the winter of 2006. So right when news was breaking of a potential millionaire's tax. So they asked some questions. Are you considering moving your personal residence out of Washington? 44% of business owners in Washington said yes. That's huge. Even if that was 10%, I would say that's huge. 44%, that's wild. It said, does your business plan to expand in Washington in the next year or two? 86% said no. We're not, of course not. And why would they? How is your company responding to the tax increases? 53% said, well, we're raising prices for customers. 53%, and that's what we said would happen. The more you tax businesses, they're going to have to pass those tax along. 53% said they're raising prices for customers. That's what they did when a $14 billion in new passes last year was passed on their backs. Yeah, well, we're just making things more expensive for customers. It's absolutely insane. This stuff is not a surprise. It's just wild. All right, are we in a tech bubble? Are we in an AI bubble? Could the impact, could the future of AI impact your retirement portfolio? Those are all totally legitimate questions that you absolutely should want to know the answers to. And our friend Zach Abraham with Bulwark Capital can help you out with that. If you want to do a free Know Your Risk portfolio review with Zach and his team at Bulwark, you can sign up knowyourriskpodcast.com, knowyourriskpodcast.com, and just treat it like a second opinion. Like, hey, here's my current allocations. Here's where I'm at. What do you think about it? Zach will talk about the impact AI could have on the market this year, how Bulwark is focused on risk management, and how they incorporate value-based principles in managing retirement portfolios. So they'll do that in a full reveal, of course, of how Bulwark is always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, give your retirement as much upside as possible. So schedule your free Know Your Risk portfolio review and subscribe to Zach's Daily Market Recap at knowyourriskpodcast.com. That's knowyourriskpodcast.com. We're going into a little overtime today. That's all right. We have a lot to talk about. Let's get to our segment, Unbelievable. Oh my gosh, unbelievable. We've been talking a lot about student walkouts lately. We had on two parents who have now yanked their kids out of public schools because there was these anti-ICE protests happening at their kids' schools. In one of the cases, the dad said his son felt forced to participate. So he called his dad and said, come pick me up. It's insane. But Democrats love this. They're training the future protesters of America, the future left-wing activists of America, who are going to stalk ICE around town or stalk Republicans or, God forbid, assassinate Republicans, whatever it is. They're training the future activists of America. So they've just introduced a bill, House Bill 2732, that would protect kids who choose to protest from any punishment whatsoever. It says the legislature recognizes that there are reasons beyond sickness and emergencies that are deserving of being excused absences. Therefore, the legislature finds that limited excused absences for civic activities by students must be recognized by school districts as excused absences. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. They want kids to have an excused absence to go out and protest. It says each school district shall grant up to one day each academic term for student participation in civic engagement activities and provide a form to accept requests for these absences. School districts may establish requirements for the request, but may not deny a request for reasons not described in this section or unrelated to this middle process. So they want literally to protect, to have a protected day where you could be sick, vacation, or you could go out and protest. And I've said of this, kids have First Amendment rights. And I've said, look, if you're a kid and you feel so strongly about something that you want to walk out of school to protest for it, you should learn that sometimes standing up for what you believe in means there could be consequences for that. That's a valuable life lesson in and of itself. But if you know there are consequences, then you'll probably limit that activity to something really meaningful for you. Something that you're like, no, I believe in this. I'm willing to take the unexcused absence or whatever it is. But instead, you're just going to give them kind of a free protest day. It's really strange, especially, you know, last week, there were all the anti-ICE protests. Like, I talked to this kid out by our studio. Remember, I encountered those Kirkland student protesters, and one of them's like, man, we're just here to miss class.
Do you support this?
No.
Me either. I promise you, I'm a Trump supporter.
So why are you here?
Bro, I'm just doing this so I can support ICE.
Support ICE?
Yeah, once they talk, they shit. I'm gonna talk.
Are you a student?
Of course.
There's no teachers that come nothing. With you guys?
This is not the teachers' plans. We're all going to get absent. I'm showing you right now. I'm skipping too. But look, you see how many students?
Yeah.
Just to skip, I promise you. This is just to not be in school. What?
Crazy.
Like, let me know.
All right. Be safe, though.
Yeah. So that's what you're going to have. You're going to have a bunch of kids who are like, oh, I get this one free day, so I'm definitely going to use it. And I'm going to, just to miss class, walk out and protest whatever it is. Do you really think if the protests that were happening last week were pro-Trump protests in our state, do you really think Democrats would have introduced that bill? If these were like kids protesting illegal immigration or protesting for election integrity, do you really think that Democrats would be introducing a bill to protect them from repercussions? I think not. It's absolutely crazy. I want to revisit quick. I mentioned the interview that Chris Reichdahl, the head of superintendent of public instruction, did with Carlene Johnson of the Center Square. And she was asking him about these student walkouts. And again, more word soup from elected leaders.
And Federal Way this week, a school board president, the city council president, came out and urged students to walk out in ICE protests. You've seen these have been going on all over the place. And he encouraged them to protect their identity by covering their faces. Do you support these kids walking out, missing school?
We have not been able to say this but 1,000 times. Kids don't lose their First Amendment rights. That's what the courts have said. Our school's job is to keep them safe when that occurs. So they do get to do that. Okay. And all of our applicable attendance rules apply. So most of these kids will be marked with unexcused absences. If the parents are involved and they excuse it, I suppose there's a path for that, okay. Although some don't allow that to be excused. Again, Turning Point USA clubs being encouraged and don't get coverage, but kids who are on the other side of the political issue do. Any kid who wants to walk off for a protest on either side of an issue gets First Amendment protection, but the school should try to keep them as safe as possible. Our guidance says try to construct this on weekends and evenings, not during the school days. Avoid that as much as possible. But at the end of the day, that is the right of any of us, and there are consequences to that for students. Again, I just think it's incredible that what we cover is when it's quote unquote liberal kids on ICE and it's not conservative kids when Charlie Kirk, you know, was assassinated, a tragic, tragic event. All kids have this right. And so let's cover it as if all kids have this right and all kids have this consequence if they step out of school. There are consequences that they got to make up work. It's probably going to be an unexcused absence. Yeah. Parents notified.
What is he talking about? Maybe I'm crazy, but I don't remember kids walking out of class after Charlie Kirk was assassinated in our state. Maybe in other states, and I could have missed it. But also, it's not as if, and he's saying that those don't get attention. Like, no, I'm sure that anytime there's a protest that kids are walking out, it gets covered by the news, and I feel the same way about it. I'm totally consistent on it. I don't care if you're walking out to protest in support of ICE or you're walking out as a student to protest opposing ICE. You have to have a consequence because it's a good, valuable life lesson, and we can't have this free-for-all in our public schools, and this bill would upend that consequence, not to mention everything we talked about last week, which is the safety element. Those Kirkland kids just walking in the streets while their friends drove by at 50 miles an hour on a 20-mile-an-hour street, there's a danger element there that puts the liability on taxpayers. So what is wrong with him? And he has to make it sort of a whataboutism when no, it's just a reasonable question. You know, what are we going to do with this becoming more and more frequent? And we've got Democrats who are passing bills or trying to pass bills that would excuse it. It's just odd. All right. Do you want to do a commercial break here? You want to keep going? I don't know where we're at. Let's see. Let me do this really quick before we foreway into national and the Super Bowl stuff. I appreciate, so you know that last week the House Democrats denied my press credential. In Olympiad, I'm going back and forth with the chief clerk all weekend who's saying, oh, no, they might still let you in press conferences. You have to ask them separately about that. This just keeps you off the House floor. And it's like, how many press credentials do you want me to request from different entities? It makes no sense. They denied mine. They denied Jonathan Cho's. They denied Ari Hoffman's. I also just heard, I won't put him on blast unless he wants to, just an hour ago from another individual who I wouldn't even consider they might view him as conservative, but he does straightforward news, who had his press credential denied. And I really appreciate this. Congress members Dan Newhouse and Michael Baumgartner just wrote a letter to Speaker of the House Lori Jenkins with the Washington State House of Representatives. And they advocated for us to get our press credential back. I'll read this. It says, Speaker Jenkins, we write to you expressing our strong opposition to the Washington House of Representatives' decision to deny press passes for independent journalists Ari Hoffman, Brandi Kruse, and Jonathan Cho. These denials are a blatant violation of the First Amendment to the United States Constitution and its protection of the freedom of the press. Our founding fathers designed a system of governance that allows any citizen to publicly question our government. The First Amendment exists to prevent discrimination and punishment of the press for the views, thoughts, or words in their coverage. The job of the press is to agitate, investigate, and scrutinize our leaders and institutions, which distinguishes democracy from dictatorship. It is truly baffling and troubling that we find ourselves today addressing such a clear violation of these bedrock principles. In this era of polarization and one-party control of all branches of government in the state of Washington, it is vital that independent journalists have the ability to ask difficult questions and hold elected officials accountable. We request that the House of Representatives immediately reverse this decision, issue press passes to these journalists, restore their ability to take part in the democratic process and hold their government accountable. Regards, Congressmembers Dan Newhouse and Michael Baumgartner. So I appreciate them using, you know, the power of their positions in Congress to try to advocate for us to get that press credential. And it's really about being treated the way that other, that legacy news reporters are treated. And I have in the past said, well, I'm not a journalist, I'm a political commentator. But it doesn't matter to me. If you're engaged professionally in the dissemination of information to an audience, whether you're a podcaster, a YouTuber, a blogger, an opinion writer, whatever it is, you should have access to cover people in power. They shouldn't be able to pick and choose who they let in. That makes absolutely no sense. It's a total affront to the First Amendment. And I think that as long as you can abide by reasonable decorum rules and behave yourself, you know, when you're down there, so that they can conduct their business, I don't have a problem with it. I feel the same way for left-wing bloggers and whatever it is. They should all be down there because they're there to advocate and to get information for their viewers and listeners. So I just want to share that update with you as the fight on that continues. All right, we'll get into Super Bowl stuff and nonsense and halftime shows coming up next. First, so many Undivided viewers and listeners are now members of the First Mark family. FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. There's a lot of reasons for that. Exceptional service, they can help save you money, make sure you have the right insurance that's actually going to cover you in the event that you really need it. Rennell, Debbie, Connie have all emailed us or commented and said that they are members of the First Mark family because of our show. Rennell said, heard about First Mark on the Undivided podcast, right as our rental properties insurance was being non-renewed. They were able to get us better coverage at a less premium. We were so impressed. We now have had them find us insurance on all three of our rental properties, our personal property and our auto, all for less. And a reminder, they also do business insurance. In fact, all of our insurance at Undivided, we proudly use First Mark Insurance for that as well. So FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you, not the insurance companies. So they always have your best interest in mind. All right. President Trump hated the halftime show. Mm-hmm. Also, congratulations to the Seahawks. You know how I feel about the Seahawks. Until they apologize to Dory Monson, I don't care if they win a single game for the rest of the franchise's history. But I love to see a lot of you happy. So yay, Seahawks. So Donald Trump hated the halftime show, is this whole thing, because it was Bad Bunny, and he apparently didn't do anything in English. Is that true? Nothing in English?
That's
wow. Okay.
What I heard. It didn't, from what I saw.
I didn't watch it. Donald was big mad. He said, the Super Bowl halftime show is absolutely terrible, one of the worst ever. It makes no sense. It's an affront to the greatness of America and doesn't represent our standards of success, creativity, or excellence. And nobody understands a word this guy is saying. And the dancing is disgusting, especially for young children that are watching. Anyway, that's probably all I have to say about that. But as you know, there was an opposing halftime show after Bad Bunny was selected that Turning Point USA put on and had a couple country artists, Kid Rock performed, and then they introduced him as his real name because they said, ladies and gentlemen, so-and-so. I'm like, who's that? But it was Kid Rock dressed normal, singing like a normal song, and he actually had a pretty good voice. So we watched the Turning Point USA one, I think more so out of curiosity. I've watched some clips of Bad Bunny. Look, I didn't think it was horrible from an entertainment perspective and choreography and everything. I didn't think it was horrible. Do I think they should have someone who only sings in Spanish? No. I'm sorry, but this is America. And I always like a little mix of, like, why does it have to be the same performer? Like Turning Point USA did, you know, I think four or five different performers.
Right. Kid Rock, Brantley
Gilbert.
Have
a mix. Have it be Bad Bunny, but bring in Chris Stapleton. Mm-hmm. Have a little bit for everyone. So, you know, I'm not super triggered by it, I will say, because the NFL always picks the oddest half-bull performances, the wokest stuff. Like, they sang before the game the Black National Anthem. We just have one national anthem. Why are we being so divisive? So I asked you guys in our daily subscriber show poll, which Super Bowl halftime show did you watch? Bad Bunny, Turning Point USA, or neither? I know you were gone this weekend. Were you back from Vegas by the time?
Yes, I was back in time for the game, and we watched, I saw the beginning of Bad Bunny just to see what it was going to look like, and then went over to the Turning Point USA. But I got to say, I kind of wish they had pick some more upbeat songs, because it was a little dull during moments, but I did watch more of that than the other.
Yeah, I mean, it was their first go at it, right? And so they obviously pre-produced it. It obviously wasn't a live production, which is probably, like, being involved in production, that's probably the safest bet. When you haven't actually done something like that before, having it pre-produced. I watched Turning Point USA, I think out of curiosity, and also I'm like, I want to give them the views, right? And they apparently had millions. I mean, when I tuned into their live stream, there was like, no, there was 5.25 million watching when I tuned in, and I don't know what the ultimate number was. 56% of you said you watched Turning Point USA, 14% Bad Bunny, 29% said, I didn't watch either of them.
Wow, walked away or didn't watch the game, I wonder.
I don't know, probably, I guess I should have clarified. But yeah, I thought the Turning Point USA one, obviously it's not as exciting, right? It doesn't have that like production value, and you're right, a little too much country, and I love country. But I think you want a little mix. The Kid Rock, the one Kid Rock song that he lip sang to was the only like non-country sort of exciting moment.
Right. Was it lip syncing or was it just the, I think there was some audio issues with it
being
off.
Maybe, but his second one he clearly sang. But that one was like he was screaming words. It was like that Kid Rock, what was the song? His famous one? It wasn't Cowboy, it was something else. Anyway. Oh, I'm Kid Rock. I don't know.
Yeah,
anyway,
I don't really
Let's see. Jim says, I did dishes. Kids watched Bad Bunny. Even though neither one of my kids speaks Spanish. Cynthia, I wasn't at home and Bad Bunny was on the TV of the house I was at. Not my house, not my choice. Kia King makes a good point. I couldn't begin to name the artists on the Turning Point show, but I was really impressed with the music. I could see the Bad Bunny show in the next room and could tell by the video that I was not interested. Yeah, I didn't really know. When the female artist came up for the Turning Point show, I recognized her songs.
Gabby Barrett.
Yeah, but I didn't know her.
Yeah.
And then the two before her, I had no idea who they were.
Oh, Brantley Gilbert and Lee
Rice. I don't know them.
They're pretty big. They're a little bit older. They've been around for a little while.
Yeah. So. I basically just knew Kid Rock.
Okay.
Jeff, I watched the TPUSA event. Not much to write home about. The reviews of the Bad Bunny event sounded like Bad Bunny was more entertaining. But I would like Turning Point USA to stick with it again next year and amp it up. Yeah, I feel like you went into Bad Bunny knowing how you were going to feel about it no matter what. Your mind wasn't going to be changed because I saw like on my timeline, it would be like best halftime show ever, worst halftime show ever. And it was like, OK,
I know somebody,
somebody
I know that supports the other side said, oh, that's the most kid friendly one I've seen. OK. That was not kid friendly.
No, I like, saw that's like not dudes grinding on each other, and now.
But you'll defend whatever, I guess.
Yeah, like I don't. They just pick the weirdest performers. I don't get it. Chris said, I appreciated the competition and the ability to choose. Yeah, I like that. I hope Turning Point USA continues to do it, so you have a little choice.
I mean, maybe the NFL will have Kid Rock there next year. Who knows? But I get this was kind of a. I consider this kind of a protest, right? So let's see what they do next year. Did this work or did
just do a couple people?
Do they
want to
keep dividing us?
Right. Todd says, I don't care about the halftime show. No one should. It is an argument with no winner. I'm sick and tired of these arguments and debates over topics that are losers. Even before we were as politically divided as we are as a country, people still debated the halftime performance.
They did.
There are still haters, non-haters. Nobody's ever happy. You're right. Nobody's ever happy with the halftime performance. But I will say, I feel like Bad Bunny was a weird choice. It was clearly intentional because of what's happening with immigration in the country. Could I have heard a couple songs from him and been fine? And then somebody else? Sure.
Right. He had Ricky Martin there, I think, right? And what? Ricky
Lady Gaga.
Yeah. Why didn't you have... Well, Lady has already done a halftime show. But you could have had everybody involved, some a little English, some a little Spanish. That would have been a little bit more...
Yeah.
You know, inclusive.
I don't mind including Puerto Rico, obviously. No, they're fine. Come on in. We'll celebrate you too. Anyway... Let's not get, we have real stuff to be angry about.
Exactly.
Like boys allegedly assaulting girls in wrestling matches. I do want to say really quick, though, about the Seahawks situation. We'll discuss it more coming up this week. We would be foolish to believe that the Seattle Seahawks, it's impossible for them to be sold to a different state, to an owners that will move them out of state. That already happened with the Sonics, because we were not a friendly environment for the Sonics. And we took them for granted. As the Seattle Seahawks go up for sale, Washington State is about to pass the millionaire's tax. It will make this the most inhospitable state in the nation for wealth, and it will make it the most tax-heavy state in the nation to own an NFL team or to play for an NFL team. We already know it's going to hurt free agency. If a player is choosing between Seattle and somewhere else and it's a close call and they know that they'll get taxed up the wazoo in Seattle, you don't think they're going to pick somewhere else? It has happened before. And so that's already an issue. But if you're going to pass a millionaire's tax and the person who's going to buy the Seahawks is going to be a very rich individual, we already have capital gains here. And then on top of that, you're going to punish millionaires and they'll probably be a billionaire to have to buy the definitely have to be a billionaire to buy the Seahawks. If you think the chance is zero that that new owner won't move them out of state to somewhere that's more tax friendly, you've lost your mind. You want to tempt fate again? So if you care about the Seahawks, if you care about getting back to the Super Bowl, if you care about that team staying here, you should be emailing your elected leaders today. I don't care if you're a Democrat, Republican, Independent. I don't care if you've never cared about politics in your life, but you care about sports and what that brings to our state. You should be emailing your elected representatives in Olympia and the governor today and saying, do not do this. We don't want to lose our team. Do not pass the tax on millionaires. All right, we'll get to comments from the live stream.
On that, I would say it's a business.
It's bottom a line freaking is it's business.
And I think people forget that they'll do the right
thing. Here's the other business. Thing. Good point. These people who support this millionaire's tax, they think so little of the rich. Oh, they're horrible, greedy people. Okay. Let's say they are horrible, greedy people. So then they're going to make the decision that's best for their bottom line, right? And that would not be to keep the team here.
Nope.
So on one hand, you want to believe that they're going to do the right thing and keep the Seahawks here. But on the other hand, you think they're evil, rich people?
No, they are.
Those two things don't work together.
They are a for-profit company.
Right. God, good Lord. Why are we so smart on this show?
Well,
why are we so damn smart?
It doesn't take a genius to know these things. That's the problem.
Good grief.
So where's everybody's brain?
All right. On the school ignoring sexual assault allegations against a trans wrestler, Lil Ms. J, $50 super chat. Whew. Thank you, Brandy and Nicole, for fighting for our youngest daughters. And ladies, please don't stop. This burns me up every day. I agree. Moon Goddess, and we have a follow-up report tomorrow. Moon Goddess, I hope other girls come forward that got assaulted like that brave girl did. We all know there's more, and I pray they come forward to stop him. And look, it's allegations, innocent until proven guilty, but we see what happens on video, and it leads us to believe that something absolutely happened that was not right. Stephanie, thank you, Brandy Cruz, for having my daughter on your podcast and giving her a voice. Oh, is this Callie's mom?
It must be.
Words cannot express my gratitude toward you. No, thank you for letting her come in and share her story. And thank you for trusting us with that story. That's a very difficult thing. And for allowing your daughter to use her voice in that way. That's a scary thing as a parent. We've seen, the hell that some of these other teen athletes have gone through. It takes one hell of a brave teenage girl to do what these girls are doing. And we are happy to have her in the fight. Necro Two Shoes, the adults have failed her every step of the way. I agree. Jay Can. Ref's number one job is to protect the athletes. What was going on with him? Now, if you watch the video, he's not in a position, I don't think, to see what was going on because he's up front. And right. So if you weren't seeing, you'd have to be on that backside. I'm going to give the ref the benefit of the doubt because that was so egregious that I think he just couldn't see it. That's my thought process. Watermelon, I feel like I've seen Puyallup School District a few too many times on this show. What a mess of a school. Well, one of the reasons is once we break a story, you often then have people, as was the case here, who are impacted, who kind of find the courage to speak out.
Right.
So it ends up being a little bit of a snowballing effect. TC Knowlton, whatever happened to the Me Too movement? We need to believe the women and girls. Yeah, believe, but trust, but verify. But yes.
They are believing their
version of women.
Version of women.
Yeah. Kelly Eli Cullison, the schools in Washington often protect the predator over the victim. The punishment for this needs to be much harsher than it is. On the supervised repeat offender offending, Matt M. says, surely he was just turning his life around. He just needed to rob a few more elderly Asian women, and then he'd turn his life around.
You know what? That was a really good, like, I hadn't thought about that before, how you get in your car and you just throw your purse on the yes. seat next to you, and there he just watches you do it and goes up, smashes yep. the window and grabs it.
Well, or even I saw this video of this woman saying that she was gassing up mm-hmm. and she got out of her car. Her purse was there. And as she's gassing up, someone just opened her car door and took her purse. And she's right. like, oh, my gosh. So I always now lock it. So that's a good thing to know. Let's see. On the income tax bill being the least popular ever in Washington state history, Milkman says Florida has a population 300% of Washington, but has a budget only 50% higher than Washington. Washington has a spending problem, not a revenue problem. I agree. Yeah. Let me see here. Observer, many millionaires create jobs. Many people are too freaking stupid to understand that. Yes. fair. Mm-hmm. This was a good one. I saw this chat as it was coming in the live stream. Matthew Cook says, if income isn't property, then why do we arrest people if they take it from someone? Hmm. Right. It's not their problem. You can just take it. That's a good point. I like
Very
that.
Very good point.
On the Dems filing the bill to protect kids to protest. All we have to do is have, if this bill passes, mm-hmm. we help kids stage a protest every day. It could be a different school or a different kid, whatever, every day, pro-Trump. Pro-Trump,
yeah,
you know, pro anti-illegal immigration, then they'll repeal this bill right quick. Hilo Main says, wait until they protest for the Second Amendment, then it'll turn this right
There's
around.
Another one. Yep.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Okay, I think we'll end on that one. We'll get to our closing. Thank you, Nicole. Sanity mm-hmm. check coming up next. First, February. Oh my gosh, we're already 9 days into February. It's Valentine Roofing Month, and it's all about spreading the love. So if you're a Valentine customer, if you loved your new roof or siding, now is the time to share that level of care and that love with your friends or family, because Valentine Roofing is expanding their customer referral program through the end of February. So when you refer friends or family for a new roof or siding, you'll earn your choice of a free maintenance service, or you'll get a $250 gift card. And as you know, you can be confident when referring your loved ones, because every Valentine Roofing customer receives the Valentine experience. I can attest to that as a Valentine Roofing customer. Seamless communication, meticulous cleanup, and they go the extra mile, even in winter weather. And by the way, they have flexible financing options with payments as low as $159 a month and zero down. So a Valentine roof is a roof that's built around your budget. So reach out to our friends at Valentine 206 Roofing. Schedule your free estimate, and if you get that roofing or siding service from Valentine, make sure you refer a friend to cash in on that either free service or that $250 gift card. So 206 Roofing, 206 Roofing. And with that, let's get to our closing sanity check. The internet's like, Brandy, why haven't you condemned President Trump sharing the cartoon that showed the Obamas as apes? Well, it happened after our show on Thursday. But also, and actually this question, like a friend asked me about this, and I thought it was just a really weird, like, do I have to defend everything the president does? Is everything he does, because I voted for him, now my problem? So first, let me say, if you're not familiar, President Trump on Truth Social retweeted a video that was about voter, like illegal voting or something like that, or stolen elections. But then in a couple, like a minute in, there was this flash of a video that showed the Obamas on their heads on apes. Now, whoever made the ape video, clearly that's quite racist, totally inappropriate, absolutely indefensible. I will say, though, when I saw what President Trump reposted, I thought, did he know it was there? Because it's weird, because it's like the video is about stolen elections, and then it's like this flash of the Obamas as apes, and then the video continues.
Like a Lion King theme.
Yeah, it was like a part of a larger video on a Lion King thing that had the Democrats as like, and Trump was right. the king of the jungle, right?
Which is silly because there are no apes in the Lion
right.
King.
And also, why are you going to make the black people the apes? Like, it's clearly racist. And for the record, I do believe that no matter if he knew it was there, he's the president of the United States. Can we do a little more due diligence before you just send something out? But anyway, President Trump responded to it.
Mr. President, a number of Republicans are calling on you to apologize for that post. Is that something you're going to do?
No, I didn't make a mistake. I mean, I look at a lot of thousands of things, and I looked at the beginning of it. It was fine. And they had that one post, and I guess it was a takeoff. By the way, a lot of people covered. If you look at where it came from. A lot of, I guess it was a takeoff on The Lion King. And certainly it was a very strong post in terms of voter fraud. Nobody knew that that was at the end. If they would have looked, they would have seen it. And probably they would have had the sense to take it down. But that was a takeoff on The Lion King. And a lot of people were covered. One different.
Yeah. So he says, he said that once they realized it was in there, he took it down or whatever. So technically he did make a mistake. Yeah. I mean, if you're making the video, you don't put the black people's head on the apes unless you're intentionally trying to trigger people. And yes, the president of the United States or his people, you ought to be reviewing the entirety of a video if the president of the United States is going to share it. But it is what I assumed it was. I was like, there's no way somebody retweeted it in haste. It was a video about stolen elections. There's no way he, because they were acting like he retweeted just the video of the Obamas as apes. And it's like, no, that's not exactly what happened.
Even some of the news organizations that I saw tweeted it out, yeah, had edited it down to just that and said, yes, he tweeted this.
And also, the full Lion King accurate video is actually kind of hilarious.
Right.
With Trump as king of the jungle. It's right, actually a funny video. And it's got like Hakeem Jeffries as the little like mole thing. And he's singing and stuff. And it's actually, yeah. And then Kamala is a turtle.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, there was a lot of funny things in there. But I get the ape thing. It's just offensive. No need to do it. Some things are offensive. I know that we're past this, like, everything is offensive, but some things you just don't do, okay? And then somebody just told me, Brandy, you're funny. Do you mean balaclava? Baklava is a rich, sweet dessert pastry originating in the Middle East. Is that how you say the face thing? Balaclava? It's not baklava.
When you now said you baklava, say it, I was like, huh, okay.
Maybe you just were going to let me terms roll with it?
Well, I thought maybe there was two terms.
Okay. Maybe baklava means boast. Apparently, I'll learn how to say this. Thank you, Carol Bradley. Balaklava. There, whatever. Face covering, okay? You know what? It's not like my job's to talk for a living. Give me a break. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Please go read our exclusive report up now on Patreon Locals. There's no paywall. And share it. A lot of people are like, can I share this? Yes, share. You can share things from Patreon Locals as much as you'd like. And we want as many people to see this as possible. We will have a follow-up report on this tomorrow as well. So thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving Common Sense a comeback. We appreciate every single one of you. What else? Gosh, I really think that's it. Oh, I know that you guys were going to guess the Super Bowl score, and I was going to send you free stuff. I haven't reviewed your guesses yet. And no, you can't go put your guess in right now. You had to have done it on Thursday. I highly doubt anyone guessed the score correctly, though, because that was a weird game. But we'll go find out. Mm-hmm. I'll let you know tomorrow. Okay, see you back here, same time, same place, tomorrow. Toodle.